So I will be speaking about some calculation of the entanglement entropy in the case which I can understand, namely in the case of some integrable model. So and for that we will use again this replica trick explained on the previous lecture, and we will go through all the stages using Mathematica, and we'll see that actually you have to be careful when performing the replica trick, and that it's not always obvious how to do that, but we'll manage to get to the result, and that's because of Mathematica. Okay, so let me just recall it, the idea of the replica trick again, just to fix some notations. So if you have some 1 plus 1 dimensional theory and you have an interval, say going from R to 0, and you want to compute an entanglement entropy, you have first to compute the density matrix, reduce it on the interval, let's call it A. And this is done in the following way. You just draw this picture now in two dimensions, and you have this partition function with a cut. And then, so your density matrix, it has two sets of indices, I and j, because it's a matrix. So let's say i's, they will belong to this cut. So if you think about some spin chain, then this will be a discrete set of numbers, and j's appear in here. Right, then, as it was also explained in the previous lecture, one can instead compute the following quantity. Take this rho as a matrix to the power n, and let's denote this as what is S and A, and then the derivative of this function at, okay, so what notations at n to 1 will give you precisely minus log of rho A times rho A. Right. So, however, of course, at this stage there are some subtleties. Namely, we know this function only for positive integers, and we have to analytically continue it somehow to be able to differentiate. We should know this function in the vicinity of 1. Right? And normally, you can say that there are infinitely many ways of doing that. Just because, imagine, you have some fn which matches your data at integer points, say 1, 2, 3, and 4, and so on. And you can obviously always add a function which has zeros at this point, right? For example, what could it be? It could be 1 over, say, gamma function of minus n. Right, so if you add 1 over gamma function of minus n, that's a function which has zeros at the integer point, and in principle that that also gives you some analytic continuation of your fn's to non-integer values. However, you can object to this proposal that actually 1 over gamma, it behaves really badly at infinity, right? So you can bound those possibilities by requesting a nice behavior at infinity, because 1 over gamma, it will behave roughly as e to the pi n if you go along to the big imaginary values. So, okay, so we can get rid of this ambiguity by requiring the nicest possible asymptotics at infinity. So another possibility, you can say, okay, so let me do something more tricky. Let me add sine of pi n over, I don't know, 10 plus sine of pi n. So obviously, it's also a nice function in the sense that it goes through the same integer, at integer values, it goes through the same points. However, I can say, okay, but now you created lots of poles in the complex plane. So again, if you require the nice analyticity, at least in the right part of the plane, so say somewhere here, we fix all the ambiguities by requesting that our function is nice and at infinity it doesn't behave too much, misbehave too much. So basically, in practical terms, what you'll see if you consider all these possibilities, say you have your function at integer values. Right, and then if you take some bad analytic continuation, what you'll see that your function like goes up and down, right? And obviously that you say, come on, I can do much better. I can just do something like this, right? So in practice, that's what people do. And we'll see that actually, indeed, by making this plot, you can discard some of the analytic continuations, even though they were used in some classical papers, but and then replace them by the true ones, which looks more reasonable, and then they indeed lead to the nice result. Okay, so as I said, our goal is to compute first this quantity, and then, okay, with some problems, maybe we'll be managed to analytically continue and extract the entropy with minimal amounts of ambiguities. So to do that, what we have to do, as was explained before, say, let's take n equals 3, because I have only 1 hour for my lecture. That will already take probably 10 minutes to draw this. So n equals 3, and let's have some cuts, which are considerably big, because in practice they're infinitesimally small. For the purpose of being clear, let's do that. And for, let's label this sheets 1, 2, 3. That will be important for to fix the notations. And then let's assume that this part, so these are indices j, the second set of indices, is contracted with the first set of those. So I have a cut going like this. And here the same. Okay, and now the tricky one. So I was training all the night to do it, basically. So you go down all the way. And then you connect here. And then another one. Okay, hope you appreciate it. So that's our Riemann surface on which will be populated by our field theory. And then we'll have to compute the partition function on this with this boundary conditions. Okay, so what can we say about this? So it looks a bit scary, right? So if it was free field on the plane, then we know what to do. But if it's something like that, so we should get used to this a little bit. So imagine, forget about those cuts. So imagine you have just 10 copies of the same theory. So they are completely non-interacting, which means that you just have to take the particle content of your theory and multiply it by n, right? You just add an index n, or we'll use actually index mu, to each of your particles. So mu will be an index going from 1 to n. And so you have corresponding, let's consider the simplest case, with one particle, one type of particle of mass m in the initial
theory. And then in your in state, for example, you can now populate your in state with your particles, which will now have this extra index mu, which will tell on which sheet actually those particles live.
Okay, so that's the scattering asymptotic state of your particles. So what are these theta? So that's the standard notation. These are rapidities. We denote the energy per particle to be mu cosh theta, and the momentum be mu sinh theta. So that's a nice parameterization, because it's good for Minkowski theory, but if you decide to go to the Euclidean theory, then this theta will play the role of the angle, roughly speaking, under which your packet is propagated. Okay, so we see that we just multiply the number of particles, and so far that's all we need. So next, even if we are in the flat space, we can't do much in the interacting field theory except for a few examples. And one of those examples is when the theory is integrable. So what is an integrable field theory? That's like a usual field theory, but you have a bonus of having infinitely many integrals of motion. So what are those integrals of motion? We already know a couple of them. So it's cosh theta, sinh theta. And in general, this will be some sum of m times theta I. So that's an example where you have also some more complicated functions of momentum which have to be conserved. So then there are many implications, many consequences of the simple fact. If we assume that in addition to the energy and momentum, we have those integrals of motion conserved, then not only the two particle scattering is very constrained, and you know that in two dimensions, if you scatter two particles into two particles, then the outgoing momenta are completely fixed, because you have two conditions to satisfy, right? So now when you have infinitely many integrals of motion, you have infinitely many conditions to satisfy. So all the sums should be conserved. Which also means that if you take n particles, or let's take first three, then the set of momenta is conserved. Before and after scattering, they should be the same, because actually we have infinitely many constraints, but happily enough, you can solve them with only three variables. Because obviously, if you change nothing, then you satisfy all those constraints. Okay, so that's the first consequence. So the second consequence is the following. So we can now try to see what actually this means to have an integral of motion like that. From the physics point of view, so say if we have momentum integral of motion p, what it does if we apply it on our system, it will just take all the particles and move them to the right, simultaneously. At the same time, if we act with e on our particles, or if you want, you can think about some wave packets, all these wave packets will move in such way that it will look like you move in time, right? So this particle will move slightly to the left. That particle will move slightly. No, this is right. This particle will move slightly to the left, and then it's equivalent to the translation in time. But if you have more complicated functions, basically, you can always prepare such function which acts trivially in this range of momenta. In this range of momenta, and the non-trivially shifting non-trivially this particle with momentum 2. So it means that having this symmetry
is quite fun because we can take one of the particles with momentum 2
and act only on this particle
in such way that only this particle gets displaced, because we have lots of
instruments, lots of tools to move all these particles, infinitely many tools to move the particles in all possible ways. So in one of those possibilities, you can pick one particle and move it to the left.
In such way that if those wave, you think about wave packets, there is only time to scatter in pairwise way. So it means that three
particle scattering factorizes into two particle scatterings,
and the only building block you care about is this function theta, function s, which is a function of two of the difference
of two rapidities being scattered. Okay, so in the scattering theory is very simple. You just specify one function, and this function could be different for different theories, and this will describe all possible scatterings of in state without state. So now, how is that all related to the quantity in question? Relation is the following, that we can now look at this from the point of view of in and out states, and what we'll see is some local defect at this point and another defect at that point. So we can interpret this as a kind of two-point function in a theory with n types of particles. Now when we add the cut, that's the same as computing a two-point function of so-called twist operator, which not, in a sense, really an operator,
which is just this topological defect.
Okay, and now what we can do with this sum, we can insert the complete set of states. And then you have vacuum. So we have some state, and it gets absorbed completely by this operator, and then you should just get the vacuum. And you have the, actually this is a conjugate. And the way we parameterize those states, so first, of course, there is the vacuum state. Then that could be a state with one particle. But this is too trivial, actually, to give something, because you can use the boost to set this momentum to zero, basically. And then you have so many particles, which can appear here as an intermediate step. So you get this building block, and then it's complex conjugate, and that's what we will have to compute now. Okay, and this object is what is called to be a form factor, some operator. So let's take some operator at zero, and we have some set of particles. And that will denote by F, and we have to keep track of the identities of these particles to which particular sheet of the surface they belong. And that's a function of all the rapidities. So what we want to do, we want to somehow use similar ideas of like moving particles around and so on to constrain this object. So it's not going to be the real proof, and that's why people, especially in mass physics, they prefer to call it form factors axioms. But let me try to give some motivation for some of them. So the picture which one can draw is represent this operator by some ball, even though it's some local operator, but let's like extend it a little bit to have a more clear picture. Yeah. Yeah, so you, we understood that you can either have n sheets and tell them that they are non-interacting, or you can say I have one sheet, but I have a multiplied particle content. So you can say this is a two-point function in this modified theory. Okay, so we have this object represented by this picture. So immediately, one of the things one can do, one can again start playing with these tools we have, with this control charges, and for example, move this line slightly to the right to make this line cross. So we get the picture that now this is precisely the same as theta 1, then some theta I plus 1, theta I, and theta k, something in between. Right, but we know that so now we can so which we can say is just a factor of S matrix as theta I, sorry. So which I can say is just this picture theta 1. I don't have enough space. And theta I plus 1 with particles interchanged. Theta k. But then the price to remove this vertex here is exactly the scattering matrix. S of I plus 1. Okay, so this is the first rule. So the second rule becomes perhaps a bit more natural. If we go a little bit in Euclidean space for a second, so if you replace all theta I's by some I phi I, then phi I will end cos t for I tau Euclidean time. Then those phis, they will really play the role of angles. And then you see that there is another way to interchange the order of particles. You can take this particle and just increase analytically continuous angle by 2 pi. Right? So whereas in Euclidean space, it's just a trivial geometric transformation. In the Minkowski space, you have to analytically continue by replacing theta I by 2 pi. I. And what will it do? It will just interchange the order of particles. If and it will do actually something else, because if we go back to this picture, so if we do this rotation, where we end up, we'll end up on the next sheet of this picture. So basically, in addition to changing the momentum, we also shift the index of the particle. So f of m1 to mk of, where is it, just not to make a mistake, so theta 1 plus 2 pi I theta k is the same as m f of starting from mu 2 to mu k. And then at the end, we get our particle on the next sheet, which we just denote by shifting the corresponding index. And then the order of thetas is shifted. Okay, so that's the first and second axioms. And so that the next one is slightly more tricky, but still quite simple from the physical point of view. That's about shifting a theta by pi I. So if we shift theta
to theta plus pi I,
then what will happen, you can see that your momenta in the so let's do the picture. So basically you take the first particle, theta 1, and now it flies here. So instead of the vacuum, basically you now have some theta 1 in your out state. And if you have this type of diagram, when you have some number of particles here flying, and then it's not annihilated, but you have some particle in the out state, what can happen? It can happen that this particle will actually fly outside. It will not actually touch our operator at all. Right? So there will be two types of contribution. One, where you have some picture like this, and another where it actually you have, yeah. So roughly speaking, you can decompose it in this way, and actually this contribution, it will come as a pole theta 1 minus theta 2. So in other words, if you want to decompose your process into two independent processes, what you have to do, you have to take your function f and take the residue at one of the thetas shifted by pi I. So let me write this more explicitly. So minus I residue of f. And for that, of course, in order to have this line, both particles should be on the same sheet, right? They should be the same type of particles. Okay. Not bar. Pi, theta naught, theta 1, theta k. When did I start, by the way? It was half past or something like that. So residue of that, theta naught bar, theta naught. This should give just the same process with two less particles. Okay, and there is also a similar constraint. If you take this particle and its momenta the same as the last leg. But for that to have pole, they should be able to communicate through this cut. So one of the SAMs should be shifted by one. Okay, so it's pretty easy to figure out, and it will be written in the exercise. So we have this conditions. And now let's try to find a solution in some simple, the simplest possible case. So the simplest possible case is the Ising model, but now it's the regime where there are massive particles. So it's for zero magnetic field. So we have only one particle. And actually, this is almost the same as free fermions, so it just depends on some redefinitions. And in this case, the scattering matrix is just minus 1, because basically you have just the free fermions. When you interchange free fermions, you have to change the wave function by the sign. Okay, still it's quite non-trivial, and the result will be rather non-trivial. Already in this case. So in interacting models, you can also work all the things out, just it will be less explicit. And you will also have to consider all possible particle contributions up to infinitely many particles. Of course, in some regimes, it converges. But at some point, you have no choice but do some numerics. And in this model, it's enough just to consider two particles, because higher number of particles contributions, they will vanish. So all we need is just the two-particle form factor. Of this model. So you see, it's only a function of the difference and of two numbers. So let me call them now I and j. And this I will call t. So we have now to constrain this function. And this is partly what the exercise is about. And you have, it's easy to observe using this identity, which I told you, that it only depends on the difference of the indices. That's first. Then actually, you can shift the index. Shifting the index is the same as shifting the argument of the function. Minus theta plus 2 pi j minus 1. So that's obviously for j bigger than 1. And what else? OK, that's it. So at the end, that's the part of the exercise, you will find that if you require also a nice behavior at infinity, and the fact that it only has those simple poles governed by this rule, so it's, then you get some meromorphic function with just a few poles, and F11 can be constrained completely up to a normalization constant, which you can identify with just the expectation value of the twist operator itself. So F naught is just the expectation value of T, and then over N cosine. So what's that? Okay, let's assume it's this. To N sinus. Okay, so it's some very explicit function, and it completely is completely fixed from this physical consideration. But you see, it's already not as trivial as, say, the scattering phase. So now, what we do next? So, okay, we found the form factor. Now it should be easy to compute the Rainy entropy at least. So now we have to take two pieces like that, complex conjugate. And remember that one of them was at the point R and another at the origin, right? So I have to shift by using the translation symmetry. So I get F ij of theta 1 minus theta 2 square. So that's the two-point function of TR T naught. Okay, sorry. It will first contain zero particle contribution, which is just this F naught square, and plus the two particle contribution, which is that. Then the factor due to the fact that we have them at the different points, so it's IR, the momenta of the state, which is M cos, sorry, sinh theta 1 plus sinh theta 2. That's because we want to translate. Then, obviously, we have to integrate. There is 1 over 2 factorial because it's identical, as usual. And then we have also to sum over I and j. So all intermediate steps, they are labeled by theta 1, theta 2, I, and j, which tells on which sheet the given particle is. So we have to sum and integrate over all of that. OK, so one integration, it can be performed easily if you change to theta 1 minus theta 2. And another is the sum. So let's call it theta, for example. And if you are familiar with some identities for sinhs, this can be written also as a product of something like sinh and cosh. So after that, you can integrate an eta. So that's a part of exercise. And the integral in eta, you see it's decoupled from this factor, this complicated one. And it gives simply a
some kind of this, the Bessel function, the standard Bessel function of something like 2m r cosh theta over 2.
Okay, so one of the integrals is done. So what's left? We have to compute the sum. And then we'll get the sum and integrate in theta, and we get the entanglement entropy after the continuation in n. We are almost there. So then the sum, first, we, as I said, f depends only on the difference of the indices. So I can say it's just n. This is just n and sum over j. And then this is just f1j. Okay. So now, okay, so factors you will be able to fix on the exercise. Let me switch now to Mathematica. So I hope I still have some battery left. Wake up. Could you please put my slides on? Thank you. So, okay, so it's very good. So, let me. Oh, I forgot my keyboard. It's okay.
Is that you?
So, let me start already from the point. So, this is what you get after the integration. This is just norm square of that function. Okay, and so one of the ways. What we have to do, we okay. So what we have to do, we have to take this function and sum it in J from 1 to n, right? And of course, Mathematica, I hope, will not give us any result. Let's stop, otherwise my lecture will be ruined. Okay. So of course, I mean, it's too complicated for Mathematica. So what we want to do first, let's do some numerics just to get some idea. So let's put theta to be 1/2, and let's define the function sum of n like that. And say I want to evaluate at 2, and you see it doesn't work. So you would expect that n will is replaced by its actual value, but it is not. So I mean, I'm sure there is a nice way to do that, but the fast way to do it is to insert this dummy replacement. Okay, and then immediately everything works nicely. Okay, so we can now evaluate this numerically quite easily. so we can do it for any, and let's do some table of n, sum of n, n from say 2 to 4. Let's not do too much. Okay. This plot. And by some reasons, let me put plot style red. Okay. So maybe it's actually too big. So 150 is normally not good. Okay. So you say we can compute. And what you would expect, okay, let's do some line like that. But how to do this in practice? So in practice, I don't know, you can stare on this picture for some time. You can do this line by hand, but nothing will come to your mind until you open the paper of Cardi and collaborators. Where they propose the following. So let's try that. So they said, okay, so let's use the following identity, that sum k from minus infinity to plus infinity. This is called Poisson resummation. I'm
sure you all know this, jk. So what is the sum? Maybe someone knows. Better.
No. It's not a delta function. It's a set of delta functions for each integer value of j. So periodized delta function, right? So having this, it's very nice because now you can write some sum from 1 to n of some function of j as a sum from minus infinity to plus infinity with respect to some new variable k, which doesn't now depend on n. So it will not make a problem of analytic continuation, and fk tilde is integral from 0 to n 2 pi I jk fj dj, right? Because exactly, so the sum of these exponents will give you the list of delta functions, and this integral will pick exactly n of that, right? I mean, there is some problem with the zero, but okay. So now let's see. So and now it's very nice, right? I can it works for sure for integers, but I can also take n any number like zeta 3 and compute this. So let's try to plot this. So f t of k. First, I define this integral, and we already know that we have to introduce this n naught, otherwise it will not work. And integrate ts of theta to 1/2 and to n naught times the exponent minus I jk from j to from 0 to n. So what's wrong? Okay. So ft, let's try n2. Is not available. Because it should be n naught, obviously, right? Okay. So we can do that. And now let's do a sum. Let's try some points, say 2. Sum k from minus 10 to 10. It actually converges quite well. So it gives that the exact, and our function sum of 2 is very close to this, right? I think it should be better before. But okay, so I see we are getting really close. So now we can do a table of these values. And sum of t of kn k from minus 20 to 20. Now we see it's a good limit. And n, say, from 1 plus 1 tenths to 3 plus 1 half, for example. Now we can do non-integer values easily. And OK. Let's do that. And so one thing is it takes quite long, right? So let me do some comment now. So if you know something will get very long, you can always do this funny trick. You just put dynamic n, where n will run. And OK, let's make it numerical. And then you can see live during the calculation what's going on. So then you know it will eventually finish, so you have enough time to go for a cup of tea or something like that. But what if you forgot to do that? What if you forgot to do this and it's already running for one day? So then you can ask me how to do this feature. You select, say, n, and you press F5.
And you see on top, there is a small F. Each time I click F5,
it will update dynamically. OK, but another way, we see it's quite long, so let's do this memorization trick. Okay, and then we get some list of values. So You can also do dynamic offend. Just type it and press F5, then you'll see it's running in the real time. So it will run until 3.5.
Small
number on top. Okay, that's a bit long. Change the step. Okay, now it's done. Okay, so we get some table of numbers. But now if you do list plot, we see that it's a really bad continuation, right? As we discussed,
so there are infinitely many, of course, ways to analytically continue, and that's the one of the worst probably, right? And that's the one which was used intensively in this paper, but as it frequently happens in the physics papers, even though the argument may be completely wrong, the result is totally right. And we will go in to see this by implementing the good. So let me just, how much time do I have?
Okay, by implementing the good analytic continuation.
So the idea is rather similar in a sense. So
it was actually good to introduce some new parameter k, some dummy parameter, which is not related to n, and then perform the thing with n explicitly. So unfortunately, the function itself is too complicated, so we cannot just compute the sum in j. So we have to compute sum in j from 1 to n. So what we can do, however, we can make a representation of this function by its poles in J. So if we consider this as an analytic function of J, you see it gets some poles from coming from the denominator at certain values of J. Okay, so how you do that? You just go to all these poles, you series expand, and you keep only the singular part. Then you notice some pattern, and you can write your function as a sum over all this poles. So here, what you get. So it's not that complicated, you see. So there are four types of poles. And the sum over their positions have to be done in order to reconstruct the initial function. So this L is this new dummy index, which we have to sum over in order to reproduce the initial function. But you see the advantages, we introduced a new L, but we disentangled completely the dependence on J. So now it's very simple sum in J, which we can compute analytically. Okay, but before that, we have, of course, to check that we didn't do a mistake. So, and it's easy just to sum it back. And divide and full simplify. You see, I have this nice bug in Mathematica, so you wonder why it jumps. The answer is very simple, because my mouse is hidden there. It's very nice. So you should always remember where your mouse is. Okay, otherwise, you'll discover all these 5,055 functions, which Mathematica has, right? Because it will random, your mouse will randomly pick all these functions. good attempt. Okay. So now what we can do? We can, as I said, we can now use this expression, and we can easily sum in N analytically. Relatively easily. Okay. So let me just simplify it a little bit to make it more transparent. So you see what we get? We get a bunch of these psi functions. So, and as I said, we have to actually require very precise analyticity conditions on the analytic continuation in N.
And what we in particular want, we want an analyticity in the, say, positive real part of n. And if you look at this psi function, so let me plot the psi function in case you don't know. Plot poly. So how do I know it's poly gamma? I can put the mouse on top, and I see that it's poly gamma, because it's tricky to see that it's of 0. X from minus 5 to 5. So that's the plot. So you see, for positive real part is very smooth, and then at each negative integer value, it has a pole, this function. And what we want from our analytic continuation is that it is analytic for positive n. Right? So, but remember that L runs from minus infinity to plus infinity. So this expression is fine, provided L is positive, or not negative at least. Then you get the analyticity for positive n in both lines. However, if L is negative, then it's not good. And so how can we cure? So this is, again, not the good analytic continuation. So we can cure this by noticing that actually there are relations between poly gamma and poly gamma of minus x, which their sum is roughly tanh of n, which is 0 at integer, which is singular at integer points. But if you don't want to know all these details about the function, let's call this, how do I call it? Let's call, save the value of this sum, say sum 1. Okay. And actually, you can sum another way around. So you can sum not from 1 to n, but from n to 1. Right? So it looks like exactly the same, but fortunately, not really. So I can flip my j to my n minus j plus 1. So in principle, it's the same sum. It runs over the same points. Yeah. Okay. So now it doesn't simplify nicely. But we see that now all L's, they actually appear with minus sign. Right? So both sums are fine for integer values. But then we see that this one is good for positive else, and this one is more reasonable for negative. So now what we can do, we can just use those two functions and do plot 3. So let's make a table again to compare whether it's any better. Sum. Okay, sum of sum 1, let's go, that works from L from 0 to 20, right, and then sum 2 negative, minus 20 to minus 1, sum 2, and say n from, okay, 1 plus 1 half. 4 is the step 1/10. Okay, and let's also plug some value theta, the same as before. Okay. Probably I forgot to do something. Let's see. Yeah. Okay, thank you. So now we can do the list plot. Oops. Yeah, but I think that's I fixed. Yeah. So, so this substitute looks reasonable.
sorry, actually what one should do, so is to remove this file. And you see it doesn't change the result for integers because just shift of L. Now just now it's good. So see what happened? You have to shift L in one of the storms, and then because otherwise, if you look at the expressions, you'll probably notice that for some L equals zero, L equals minus one, actually one of the psis explodes, has a pulse in the positive. Okay, so it's a unique way you actually fix the good continuation. So if you do a mistake, immediately you see some spikes. And now, let's plot both. And you see now it perfectly goes through those integer points. But now we can also run it from, say, minus one, minus one half. Okay, there are some error messages. It becomes crazy at some points. And that's because for integer n, it's not guaranteed that you don't get any pulse, right? So if we just ignore, actually the very useful function is quiet. Okay. See, now it's much better. So that and you get you see it's analytic almost up to one half or maybe even more, and then it becomes really crazy. But now it's a good analytic continuation. And the last thing, to just demonstrate that if you, let's take some of them. What we are interested in is the vicinity of n equals one. Oops. So if you expand this around one, so actually you notice that it vanishes. But that's you don't care because we need the derivative, right, of this function actually around one. So and we'll see that if we expand it around one, that it looks very nice. However, if you actually ever knew what this function is, if not, I can tell you this is actually 1/sinh, right? Quite surprisingly. So 1/sinh, so it will actually create a pole at zero. So what happens is if we look here, actually it's very easy to find where the problem comes from. It, I think, maybe not that easy. But the pole which arrives to the real axis is initially actually sitting at some finite point. So where is it? So that's the last thing I'm going to say. So a bit of patience. That's probably what I forgot to print. No. So it sees at theta I pi n minus one minus one. So let's see that there is a pole. So you see there is a pole. And also there is a pole at the complex conjugate point. So when n goes to one, you see this is like I epsilon prescription, actually. And you can check that actually both poles, their contribution cancel at the end. And what you are left with is just the delta function coming from this I epsilon prescription. So it's very nice that actually the result of this all of this long calculation is just a delta function with some coefficient which you'll have to find as a part of the exercise. And then the integration in theta is really trivial. You just replace theta by zero, obviously. And so you get for the entropy something like, so there will be some part coming from just some trivial renormalization of the operator, which we didn't discuss. And then you just get this Bessel function not at zero. So I think it's 2m. Okay, so let me finish here the scientific part. Okay, let's do the questions now. Yeah, thank you. If I get take n close to zero,
m. Well, I didn't try. Now you can do serious anymore.
I'm not a specialist.
Yes.
Okay, now, okay, so now some problems from the category good luck. That's what. So the point is that, as usual, Jason came not alone, but he brought lots of presents for us. So it's like a new year. However,
Pedro will
randomize some of those presents, but some of them you have to deserve. So you have to solve at least one of those problems, and the one who solves the problem the first will get either a license or a couple of t-shirts. Pedro now will do the traditional part of the school.
Okay, very good. So it will take 10 minutes.
I'll try to do it in 5. I know, you should thank the speaker again. Right?
Yeah.